So today is, among other things, Shabbat of re-entry, where the 50 people who went to Israel on a mitzvah mission, and we were down south in the Gaza envelope, are back, and we've all been thinking about it and wanted to share it. So we're blessed this morning to have four very thoughtful, wonderful speakers share their reflections about this incredible week in the Gaza envelope. And our first speaker is Rabbi Sonia Saltzman. Sonia and Ned were with us, and Sonia is going to share some words. Thank you, Sonia.
Thank you for this opportunity to share just a few reflections on this wonderful mission that our community took to Israel. For me, the time in Israel volunteering together with Temple Emmanuel was framed by a poem that I've often turned to, but never has it resonated so deeply. The poem, written in 1963 by Yehuda Amichai, goes as follows. A man doesn't have time in his life to have time for everything. He doesn't have seasons enough to have a season for every purpose. Ecclesiastes was wrong about that. A man needs to love and to hate at the same moment, to laugh and cry with the same eyes, with the same hands, to throw stones and to gather them, to make love in war and war in love, and to hate and forgive and remember and forget, to arrange and confuse, to eat and to digest what history takes years and years to do. These first two stanzas of the poem say it all. In just the span of one day, I felt so many conflicting emotions. At lunchtime, I was feeling so uplifted after having spent the morning together with others, weeding rows and rows of cherry tomatoes. We left a field that looked just right with its thinned out vines, and moved on to a very different kind of field. At the site of the Nova Festival, we stood surrounded by posters of the young men and women who were brutally murdered. Each picture broke my heart, but I kept looking at them and reading the notes left behind by family and friends, wanting to learn their story and honor their memory. And then another emotional swing, a short bus ride away, Gilad Junction, lifted my broken heart and filled it with joy. At this junction, which operates round the clock, volunteers provide soldiers with nourishment for the body and soul, with a barbecue to eat on site and take away to the rest of the unit, with showers and washing machines, haircuts and physical therapy, all of this provided by volunteers. We were witnesses to Israel's amazing creativity and inclusiveness. A lively musical performance at Gilad Junction was offered by soldiers with special needs through an IDF program called Special in Uniform. Their music was truly inspiring, lifting all who were there. We danced, we sang, we rejoiced with soldiers fresh from Gaza and who would be returning there shortly. Wanting to support this wonderful volunteer initiative and to hold on to their message, I purchased their swag, including a t-shirt that read, Rak Ahava Tenatzeach, only love will prevail. Only love will win. These words took me back to the Nova Festival, and more specifically to the ceremony we were a part of at the site. A Torah scroll had been written in memory of those murdered there, and we were invited to surround the sofer as he completed the scroll, as he wrote that final letter, the letter Lamed for the word Yisrael. October 7th fell on Simchat Torah, when we read the last verses of Torah and immediately begin anew. Torah ends with the letter Lamed and begins with the letter Bet, Breishit, Bara Elohim. Lamet and Bet spell Lev, which means heart, which means love, a new beginning grounded in love. Israel has come together, has found ways to love each other across political differences in ways that would have been unimaginable only a few months ago. This is Lev, this is love. I pray that this unity endures through the many challenges that lie ahead. And I pray that this Torah of Lev, of love, illuminate the path forward. Thank you.
So thank you, all of our wonderful Israel travelers. Let me invite everyone to go back to your seats, except for Noah Rifkin, who was on our trip, and Noah is going to be our next speaker to share his reflections. Noah, thank you so much.
Shabbat shalom. Shabbat shalom. I'm Noah Rifkin, and I have been coming to this Temple Emmanuel since I was a small kid. My family, my mom, my dad, my sister Ailey, they're all back there in the back row. And I think my sister Ariel is here on Zoom, so they're all here. We're all here. Growing up here, I remember scrambling up to the Bima with a million other kids to get Sunkist candies on Shabbat. And I remember being Dan Nessen's bar mitzvah student and studying hard and being up right here reading Torah when I was 13 years old. I can remember so many hard times in life, some of them recent, where we have just felt the congregation come together to support us as a family. We love it here. I love it here. And so when my parents asked Ailey and Ariel and me if we wanted to be a part of the mitzvah mission to Israel with Temple Emmanuel, the answer was like the easiest yes ever. It was a transformative trip for my family. There was a multi-generational team assembled that, by the way, did not just include Temple Emmanuel people. There were folks from LA and Washington, D.C. and New York City and Nashville, Tennessee and Omaha, Nebraska even, all with us, all together for 4 days. And we had a collaborative spirit and a trust in and an openness with one another that I think is truly rare. It was one of the best teams I've ever been a part of. And I can tell you that the work that we did for the miraculous state of Israel really, really mattered. I could tell you about fixing up kibbutzim that had been evacuated so that parents and children could return home and resume their lives after months of war. Or I could tell you about working with hundreds of strong, courageous, and oftentimes painfully young men and women in the IDF that are fighting in Gaza right now to destroy Hamas and bring home the hostages. Or I could tell you about pulling weeds with Excalibur's tenacity and nearly blowing my back out on onion farms at the Egyptian border. But what I want to focus on today is the reason that we were there doing all of that in the first place. The site of the Nova Festival on the outskirts of Kibbutz Re'im has a eerily dreamlike quality. Tall green grass and spindly Israeli trees sort of sway in the wind in the afternoon time light, and everywhere there is a carpet of thousands of poppies that glow and illuminate your conscience with red. And when we went and saw it for ourselves, everywhere there was a quiet, disrupted only once by the explosions of projectiles landing 4 miles away in Gaza that you could feel in your chest. The Nova site was terrible. A killing field. October 7th didn't just happen to Israelis. It happened to us. Our worst nightmare actually happened. We now know that in today's world, right now, 1,200 of our people can be murdered in a matter of hours. What do you do when for the first time in your life you are standing in a cemetery made solely for and filled solely by murdered innocent people? And then what do you say when the people that you were there for, the people that you showed up for and you walked with in all of the days leading up to Erev Shabbat, have abandoned you by Shabbos morning? What do you do when nothing makes sense? It occurred to me that a few years back in a Yom Kippur sermon, Rabbi Gardenswartz actually gave me a way to think about things, a possible answer to some of those questions that I have been wondering. He said then that in hard times, you need to turn to your core. That when you strengthen your core strengthens you. In times like these, I find figuring out what my core is to be pretty clear, pretty easy. It's our God. It's my family. It's our congregation, my friends, you all, and the state of Israel. What do we do in response to October 7th? Well, we turn to our core. We take care of our people in Israel as best we can, who need us as much as we need them. And we take care of each other with more urgency and vigilance and effort and love than we ever have before. These are painful times. But in time, I know that with God's help and with each other, we will rise stronger than before with a renewed dedication to repairing this world. Shabbat Shalom.
We're so delighted to call up our next speaker, our beloved friend Rhiannon Thomas, who was kind enough to join us in Israel. And Rhiannon, we're so grateful for your presence and we're so grateful for your words this morning.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
My name is Rhiannon Thomas and I am the office manager here at Temple Emmanuel. Over the past 2 years, I have had the privilege of working with exceptional colleagues and with many of you, my beloved congregants. Another privilege recently afforded me was the opportunity to go to Israel with the Temple mission trip. As you may know, I am a Christian, but that just heightened my enthusiasm about visiting. As we all know, Jesus was a Jew. This was a chance to learn more about your beloved homeland I hear so much about. The dire situation in Israel did not deter me. Rather, I felt that this could be a way of expressing my friendship with the Jewish people, as well as having the chance to see a country about which I knew so little. I don't need to give you a blow-by-blow account of our time in Israel. The speakers before have told you so much. Our time in Jerusalem, our visit to Tel Aviv, our work in the Gaza envelope. Instead, as the rabbi would say, I want to double-click on my own experiences and emotions. The war, of course, was the threatening and constant backdrop to our visit. We saw so many soldiers in the city and all over the south. I am from a country with very few guns, and to walk alongside people barely older than my high schooler who were carrying machine guns was painful and frightening. The only conclusion to be drawn from seeing that many soldiers and that many weapons is that there is something very, very wrong. And the tension was palpable everywhere. Working with people who have been directly affected by October the 7th was sobering. It's easy and fun to weed tomato vines for a couple of hours whilst chatting with companions. But we're remembering that we were trying to fill in for an entire workforce which had to flee, made for a jolting reality check. Similarly, I enjoyed weeding, again, at the playground in Sderot, but we always had the thought of the children who are obliged to play in an indoor facility in the back of our minds. As my friends have spoken about, we spent an afternoon at the Nova Music Festival. Looking at the pictures and reading the dates of birth and death of those killed was quite literally heartbreaking. And yet there I got to be part of a wonderful thing, a scribe writing the last words of a Torah. Rabbi Gardenswartz talked afterwards about the Jewish people having agency to choose their own final word, even if the first word is already written. And I love that message for myself, as well as all of us. My ultimate takeaway from visiting Israel was that the Jewish people are as one, totally committed to their country and to each other. The solidarity and depth of feeling expressed by my fellow travelers was forceful. There are so many ogres towering over Jews at the moment, in America, in Israel, and all over the world. But my small window into your lives shines a bright light on the resolution and connection, which seem both life-sustaining and indistinguishable. I am so proud and honored to be your friend, and I am so grateful I was given the gift of visiting your beloved homeland. Shabbat Shalom.
I wanted to invite our fourth and final speaker from our Israel trip, Michael Gardner, to share his reflections. Thank you, Michael.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
And I want to thank you for extending me this privilege to share a few of my impressions of the trip. I want to thank you for extending me the privilege of having the opportunity to share my reflections on the trip. I was sitting in the back there with Shira, and following the preceding three speakers, I turned to Shira and said, "Did I do something to Wes to antagonize him?" So I don't know. I also would like to very much thank the other 49 people on the trip for their insights and empathy and caring and support and help and the sheer joy of being with them on the trip. It was really something. I have three reflections I'd like to share, if I may. The first is that it would appear that the world wants to, and perhaps has, moved on from October 7th. Well, when we got to Israel, and any of you who go, I'm sure, will have the same observation, that Israel has not, cannot, and in my view, should not move on from October 7th. From the minute you get off the plane at Ben-Gurion Airport, and you walk down this long walkway, many of you are probably familiar with it, to the exit. Every 3 feet, there is a large blow-up picture of the hostages. The first day we were in Jerusalem, and walked around Jerusalem, and it, wherever you go, there are pictures and posters and remembrances of the hostages. And one that particularly struck out to me, or struck me, was there was a, and it was obviously put up by a child, there was a little teddy bear with a picture of a hostage fastened to one of the fences on the front yard. The next day we went to Hostage Square in Tel Aviv. And it's really impossible to overstate the impact of being in Hostage Square. You see all the photographs, you see some hostage families were there, and it's just extremely powerful. From there, we went down to the Negev, and we went to a kibbutz, where we walked up a hill, and on the top of the hill was that kibbutz's cemetery, where they had 29 graves laid out for 29 victims from kibbutz Be'eri. They could not be laid to rest in that kibbutz's cemetery because of work that needed to be done. But when you look down at the gravestones and you saw that every final date of their lives was the same, you know, you go to Sharon and you walk around and you see gravestones. Obviously, everyone has a different death date. These were 29 graves laid out, all with the same final date. What was particularly moving to me was there was four gravestones. It was a father and a mother and two adult children, and the mother happened to have a same birthday as I did. That struck me. And then the next day we went to the site of the festival. I confess I originally didn't want to go. I didn't want to engage in what might be perceived as voyeurism. That concerned me. But I was very glad I went. It was, Wes called it hallowed ground, and it was hallowed ground, but it's also haunted ground. For any of you who have been to Gettysburg or similar places, you can feel the ghosts there. And the same was at this site. You could feel the ghosts. And at the same time, there was this cognitive dissonance, because in this place of horror, it was also this pastoral setting where the anemones, I think that's how you pronounce it, these gorgeous red flowers were blooming everywhere. And then, as Noah pointed out, Noah was in the Marines, so he's probably a little more used to it than I was. But while I'm observing the site and watching and looking at the flowers, this ferocious artillery blast goes off. I wasn't expecting it, so it sort of shook me. And you could hear the rattle of gunfire throughout the day. The dissonance of those two things, the horror, the beauty of the flowers, the gunfire going off just, you know, a couple of miles away, was really stark. My second observation is of the resoluteness of the Israeli people and Jews. These are people whose government and military and intelligence services had terribly failed them, terribly. Yet the ordinary Israeli people rose up, filled the gap, and performed all of the things that needed to be done to take care of and heal their society. We went to I didn't realize this before, it's actually the largest hospital in Israel, but it's in Beersheba. They saw the brunt of the casualties, and for about an hour, one of the lead physicians there spoke to us. And he spared no detail about what he had done and the work that involved. And it was hard to hear, but the courage, strength, dedication of he and his staff was just quite something. When you go to the hotels, as Wes pointed out earlier in the Talmud class today, we were at two hotels, the Orient and then the Kadima down in the Negev, with evacuated families living there for 1, 2, 3, 4 months. They're taking care of their own. They are providing for them. And it was a beautiful thing to see. We also went to Sderot, and there was this really lovely nursery to provide a place for the kids to be. It was just a picture of a society taking care of its own. A little sidetrack, if we're going to talk about the strength and resiliency of the Jewish people. One day we were in the, there were two sets of weeding going on. One was sort of the wussy part. They did the tomatoes or something like that, I think. I don't know, I couldn't really give them a lot of respect. But the more hardy among us went to the onion fields. And the weeds there, I mean, we're not talking about you go to your back garden and you pull out a few weeds. These things are buried deep in the ground, and there they are. And I'm a guy who prides myself on physical fitness, and I, you know, I'm sitting down, and I'm yanking and yanking and yanking and yanking and yanking and pulling on the weed. It wasn't coming out. You've made a good choice in your selection of officers for Liz Goldstein. Because when I'm done yanking, Liz walks over and says, let me take a shot at that. And in one push, she gets the whole thing out. I was quite impressed by that. My final observation was the Israel and the Israeli people and the people we saw, they're leading a life of purpose, of dedication, of sacrifice, of sharing, of helping for a common enterprise and a common good. I don't want to sound naive. I've been a lawyer for 48 years. Naivete has left me a long time ago. But there is a family feeling about being there. And of course, families quarrel. Families fight. They don't always get along. But at the end of the day, they're family. And that's the feeling you had in Israel. And it came to its apogee for me. The last evening we were there, we were going to go out that evening back to Ben-Gurion to fly back to the United States. And we were at the Kotel. And one of the combat brigades, their new soldiers, had just finished their basic training, I guess you would say. And the Kotel was filled in a way that I had never seen it filled before. And you had these young men and women in their green uniforms, singing and cheering. And I don't know about you, but I've never seen American soldiers gathering around, holding each other by the shoulder, and singing and dancing. But they were. And more importantly than that, they had their families there. Of all, you know, all statuses of life, all classes of life, all colors, with such joy and pride on their faces. And for me, the great irony was that when I was there, notwithstanding being in a country at war, under attack, you could feel complete and whole. And then I thought about I was going to get on that plane and come back to the United States, where we don't have that feeling. And the irony for me was, I'm going back to the wealthiest, richest, most privileged country in the world. And in my heart, compared to Israel, there was an emptiness. And that was probably the biggest observation. So thank you so much for listening to me.
Be seated. I actually lied to you. I lied to the entire congregation because I said the four speakers were going to be in lieu of a sermon. But after hearing their words, this is not a full sermon, so it's a half a lie. It's not a full lie. We actually have a real problem. We actually have a legitimate problem, and I want to ask you a question about it. It's not a rhetorical question. It's a real question. Here's the problem that we collectively have and individually have. If what our four speakers said is true, then what do we do? If what Sonia said is true, if what Noah said is true, if what Rhiannon said is true, if what Michael Gardner said is true, and not only is every word true, every syllable is true, then what do we do? What is our response to their truth? And what is our response to this moment? So I want to put that question out there, and I want to say there is actually a good answer. Sometimes the best questions don't have answers. This is a rare case when a really good question has an even better answer. What do we do if everything they said is true? And the answer is go to Israel. And I'm not kidding. And I mean it. There's no reason. There is no reason why everybody here cannot go to Israel. There is no reason. There is no reason why everybody here should not be in Israel. And I want to make the case for going to Israel now for two different categories. One is the category of it's a uniquely vulnerable moment and a uniquely meaningful moment. And if you're with the Israel program and everybody in your family loves Israel and supports Israel and is with Israel, that's one bucket. And I also want to talk very much about the very real dilemma, and it's universal. It's not common, it's universal. It's not frequent, it's ubiquitous. It's not 98%, it's 100%. Where we have children and grandchildren who see Israel very, very differently from parents and grandparents. So I want to lay out in both cases, a helpful move is go to Israel. First case, everybody just is with Israel. So I can just tell you that, first of all, you heard from our four speakers how deeply meaningful it is. And I will just add that everywhere we went, Israelis said, wow, we were so all alone, and we felt so all alone. Michael Gardner mentioned that when you walk into the airport and you go down that long way, there's all the pictures of the hostages. What's also true is that it's empty. What's also true is that Ben-Gurion is empty. What's also true is that you can go through passport control in a minute like this because there's nobody there. What's also true is that the only airline that's flying is El Al. So when we were at this place Thursday night that you just heard about with the band, some guy came, not part of the band, he's an Israeli soldier, and he happened to have been at this base or at this place, and he said that when tragedy befalls other nations, like Haiti, like an earthquake, like a tsunami, the world sings "We Are the World." But after October 7th, nobody sang "We Are the World" to Israel, so we have to sing it to each other. And he sang "We Are the World." So one reason to go to Israel is because it's deeply helpful to Israelis, that they should know that they're not alone. 2 weeks ago, when our congregants were taking a walking tour of Jerusalem, and strangely, most preferred the walking tour of Jerusalem than going to shul, and the guide said, "This is my first walking tour since October 7th. So go to Israel because it's just deeply meaningful. But I want to focus also on the second. I can't tell you how many times I've had this conversation. This is the most frequent conversation I've had this year, which is, my kids are in a very different place. It's very painful to me. It usually goes something like this. We spend thousands of dollars at Schechter, JCDS, Rashi, Gann. We spend thousands of dollars at Jewish summer camp. We spend thousands of dollars sending them to Israel, and they don't get it, and they don't love Israel. We can't even talk about it. I've had several conversations, more than one, multiple. There's a subset of that, which is a particularly raw, multiple conversations, which is, my child will say to me, what Israelis are doing is a genocide. And I'll say, sweetheart, no. You are the grandchild of survivors. Your grandfather survived Auschwitz. Your grandmother survived Auschwitz. They're survivors of a genocide. This is not a genocide. This is a just war. Please stop saying that. And that unresolved, raw wound is real. And there's no villains in this drama. It's real. So here is a move for that family. If you are that family, go to Israel and join us at the Hartman this summer. Because, you know, Noah and Ariel and Ailey and Michael and Chaya were there, and it sounds like they are more aligned. But Hartman is about people who have a conversation who are not aligned, and they don't agree, and they don't see it eye to eye. And what Hartman is asking this year is a different kind of question, which nobody is asking yet, because nobody has the bandwidth to ask it yet, which is, what will Israel be after the war? Israel tomorrow. So come with your kids, especially if you're not aligned. Come with your grandchildren, especially if you're not aligned. Come with your nieces and nephews, especially if you're not aligned. Loving and passionate disagreement, welcome. And come to Hartman and have an honest and soulful and thoughtful and helpful conversation about Israel after the war. The first commandment in life is not, I am the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. The first commandment in life is show up. You will never regret showing up. You will only regret it when you don't. Turn the dissonance, the asymmetry, the difficult, challenging, weird, uncomfortable energy of not being on the same page with people you love about the homeland that we love. Turn that into a force field for good. Show up. Monday night at 6 o'clock in Gann, Amy and Brian and I are going to be talking about Hartman. It would be fabulous if we run out of space in the Gann Chapel, because all of you are there. Show up for Israel by showing up in Israel. See you Monday night. I want to make a money-back guarantee, If you come to Israel, if you go to Israel at Hartman, you will have a 100% chance, a 100% chance of being deeply glad that you did. We rise.